The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 498, recorded on March 27th, 2018.
Welcome to the 498th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, and 331st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
And he is not just a robot, and not just a cop. He is a robo-cop.
Well, he's half man, half
Here's
cop.
The thing, it's... I mean, the original phrase was part man, part machine, all cop.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. I messed it up.
So
it's a part man, part cop. I mean,
before we get into that, I should tell you, and it's not going to be late for one of these things, but the Humble Bundle has quite a thing going on right now. For one thing, right now they're offering The Darkness 2 for free.
Oh yeah,
on PC, and they have a special pack that's just been released today, number 19. And this pack really interested me. The number one thing, you know, the most expensive item that you have in order to get everything, you know, for $14 is Super Hot. I think you played that, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I reviewed it. I like that game.
Super Hot. Super Hot. Super Hot. But it also includes Halcyon 6, Mini Metro, QN, Soma, and Polybridge. And also
that's
Super
a lot of good games.
But the one game that really sold me on getting the entire pack was Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
I've heard really good things about that one.
So, and if you ever watch the Let's Play video with Yahtzee Croshaw and his wife, so in that game, one person is at the computer and he has a bomb in front of him with all these things on it. The other person is somewhere else in the next room or whatever. And they have a manual with them, which you have to print out. And the person who's watching the bomb has to call out what he sees on the bomb. And the person who's the manual has to call back to him what he's supposed to do. So it's one of those online-offline co-op things, which is just awesome. You know, you could play by yourself with a manual, but that sort of kills the game entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could also do it online if you have if you're on Skype like we are, and it's just you have to bark back all these instructions while the timer's ticking down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's very intense.
Yeah, so it's the one game I really wanted to own, so that's why I picked up that entire bundle. I have not played Soma yet, so, and I know there's actually a mode in which the monsters won't attack. You know, because here's the thing about Soma, it's not about the monsters, it's about the existential story. And that's all I know, it has a very existential story.
It might not be about the monsters, but the monsters are very, very, very interesting. Yeah. Each one of them has like a whole... We're talking about like, you don't just run into the same type of monster over and over again. There's about 10 different ones, and each of them has a very specific set of rules to them as far as... when they'll chase you, when they won't chase you, what sets them off into an aggressive state, all sorts of crazy things that it was just as unnerving to figure out how they worked as to just know that they were around.
Yeah. There are also more games being added in 6 days, so I'll be getting bonus games from that too. You know, I also have from a previous bundle when it was offered for free, the Amnesia games. I haven't played those yet. So I haven't played the really, you know, the scary games that everybody talks about yet. And I don't mean Five Nights at Freddy's Scary, which is not scary at all. It's just jump scares. I guess there's a little bit of scariness. But yeah, jump scares are the cheap. That's being startled.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also intrigued by Mini Metro, which is basically it's a subway designing game. And you can't go wrong with those kind of games. So yeah, so that's the Humble Bundle. And like I said, I'm going to try and get this podcast out as soon as possible so that people can possibly get The Darkness 2. And speaking of Yahtzee Croshaw, what amuses me is that his first ever video was about the demo for The Darkness. The first Darkness.
Yeah. They need to release a Darkness 3 because they left it on such a little cliffhanger that... Well, I mean, not a little cliffhanger, a huge cliffhanger, and...
Gee, well, if they're not going to release... If people don't release Half-Life 2 Episode 3, then, you know, it's like permission for other people to say, oh, well, if they did it, we're not going to... If they left that hanging, we'll leave it hanging too.
I would rather have Darkness 3 than Half-Life 3, to be honest.
Mm. So, yeah, I think most people are over the whole Half-Life 3.
Yeah. I was also intrigued by Super Hot, even though the story that's in the game is kind of stupid. Oh, yeah, they try to be so meta, it's almost comical in how meta they're trying to be.
All that aside, it still has some of the most interesting mechanics for gameplay in a lot of games I've played in the last couple of years.
So for those you don't know what Super Hot is, it's basically a shooter, except time doesn't advance unless you do. So you can really... Well, it does advance very, very, very slowly, but when you move, time moves. So the entire point is that you're set up with almost impossible situations and having to gun down enemies perfectly so that you survive. And then after you complete it...
Is that the VR game with your hands are in front of you?
What?
That VR game with your hands in front of you and everything is, like, moving in sync with you and you can, like, throw shit or do superpowers or whatever?
Well, it's also extremely stylized so that, you know, everything is... It's like being inside Mirror's Edge, but not with as many colors.
Yeah, it's sort of
the figures are all red.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that is the one.
Okay.
So what happens is after you complete the level, it shows you what happened in real time.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it looks all matrixy and cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that is the game then.
So, anyways, this Humble Bundle will be around for the next 2 weeks. So, I strongly advise you pick it up, especially for Keep Talking. And here's the thing, Scott, if you have not played it, you really want to play it with your wife. You'll have loads of fun because it's the sort of game in which you're trying to coordinate verbally. It's like, no, do this. No, wait, no, wait. We have time running out. Oh, you have to flip this wire and this wire. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll look at it.
Go ahead.
I'll look at it, yeah. I was like, I saw that Darkness 2 was up for free and I didn't know if I wanted to add yet another game to the list of games I'm not playing.
Well, yeah. The Darkness 2, it's not as good as the first Darkness, but
that's
it's
not
interesting
true.
Enough.
I love the Darkness 2, and I will hear no complaints. I will quarter no complaints against it.
Here's the thing. Did you notice?
I trust TJ's opinion.
Well, here's the thing. Scott, TJ, did you notice that the Darkness 2 makes reference to Yahtzee? Because here's the thing. The entire reason Yahtzee has those imps is because of the Darkness. So In the Darkness 2, instead of having multiple imps, you just have one imp who's British, who talks with a British accent. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% positive that that's Yahtzee. They made a reference to Yahtzee with that one imp.
That's a cute little nod if true, but I still like the second one more. I like the story. It really... Darkness 1 set the table... Darkness 2 brought out the main course.
I still think there was a better story in the first one.
We will disagree on that.
But anyways, for those who don't know what the Darkness is, it's about this mob guy who gets demonic powers. That's basically it. I mean, you have these tendrils coming out of you doing stuff, that sort of thing.
Yes, it is. It is implied that it's a familial curse. And he basically cannot die unless he gives his soul over to hell.
Mm. All the while he's being a mob boss in the second game.
It's like
That's
if
rather interesting.
It's like if Constantine was a game and good.
Oh,
you don't like Keanu Reeves? Was it Keanu Reeves with the Constantine?
I'm not gonna lie. I like the Keanu Reeves movie.
Okay.
I don't care if I catch hate for that. I do kind of like that movie.
I like Keanu Reeves as a human being.
Whoa. So yeah, and the other thing about the other thing about Humble Bundle, of course, is that when you buy stuff on it, part of it goes to the developers, but a lot of it goes to charities, which you can decide how much to allocate to each charity. So it's, you know, it's something nice to do as well. Yes. And, you know, ever since Humble Bundle was when did it start? Like 2010, if I remember correctly?
It's been quite a while.
Yeah, ever since, you know, it's always been a good idea. And it showed that gamers, here's the thing. World of Goo, at one point they decided to release Wonder Goo, and they said you could pay anything you like from a penny on up. And you'd be shocked how many people paid $19, $20, $30 for it. Because they said, you know, you made it. Here's what we think it's worth, you know.
That is nice.
I mean, I bought it for a penny, but, you know, I'm kidding. No, I got a part of the Humble Bundle. But still.
I think I bought that on the Wii and on Steam.
Yeah, it came out on the Wii first, and then it came out on Steam.
Yeah.
And for those,
so I bought it for both.
You know, World of Goo is a nice game. The difficulty ramps up a lot. I mean, it's like easy. Oh, and then you say, oh, crap, how am I going to do this so it actually stays up? It's deceptively hard. But when you get to, like, the second world, I think it is, it's like, yeah, I can't do this. It's impossible for me, or at least me. Maybe not other people, but for me it was like, wow, it's just too much. Anyways, we're going to go into games that we've played this week. I'm going to start first. Today was released the fifth episode, the final episode of Batman: The Enemy Within, which is the second season, and it ended great. And one of the things I know about it is that the choice that you make in episode four either drives the Joker into being a vigilante or a villain. And the fifth episode actually takes both branches separately. So it isn't the same thing, but with different dialogue. No. It is completely different scenes. So they basically made two episodes out of one. I mean, there's a lot of commonality, of course, but... So they actually took the branching storylines and went with it. Instead of, like, in, say, The Walking Dead, there isn't really much difference to the story, except who's alive and who's not. You know, in this, no. It's different. Everything is different, depending on the branch you chose. So, I highly recommend Batman: The Enemy Within. But here's the other thing: is that all the decisions I did in the first season counted at a climactic moment in which Selina had to either there was a scene with Selina Kyle, and I had treated her, you know, first and foremost, and trusted her all during the entire series, and always treated her right. And I was rewarded for that by her not betraying me at a certain point. And from what I understand, you had to be perfect with her to get it. So that felt good, because it was not only it was based on two games worth of decisions. So, I also played Monster Hunter World. One of the interesting things is that it actually asked me, since I owned an Xbox One X, I have three options. Could I have the 4K visibility, the frame rate, or more objects? I don't know if it's on the PlayStation 4 Pro, but it's like, yeah. So I got... I was also not expecting the English dub to be like a Godzilla movie, in which the English words come out, but their mouths... keep moving, because I felt like I was watching a Japanese film from the 70s. You know.
Yeah, there was some bad lip syncing there for some reason.
Well, I'm gonna try and switch it over to the Japanese dialogue and see if they talk more, because it has that thing in which the dialogue, sometimes they'll just say there'll be like three lines of dialogue in the subtitles, and they'll just say, "Yeah, let's go." I'm wondering if all the dialogue is in Japanese and they just did a token thing for English.
There's also an option that's Monster Hunter language, and I put it on that just because I would rather not try to figure out what their lips were supposed to be syncing to and just give them gibberish to say.
Oh god, it's not like Banjo Kazooie.
It's not that bad.
Then you miss your cat friend saying, "Hey, I'm helping." Or saying, you know, cute things.
Yeah.
All he ever says is "Ran."
Oh, you know, the cats are cute. The calicos. You get to create your own calico. God.
Have you met Meowskiller Chef yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's the best character in the whole game. That's all you need to know about him.
But unfortunately, I'm going to be sending it back because the controls are ass-tastic. I can forgive a lot of things, but bad controls just piss me the hell off.
That's there are two things about Monster Hunter World that just don't do it any justice. And A is the sort of ridiculous, sort of non-intuitive control style. And B is, God, that UI. They just don't
mind the
know
UI
how to
as much. That's fine. I mean, although I was surprised to see that every game is online if you have an online connection, even if you're not going to hunt with other people. So it's sort of like, you know, and I'll occasionally see a call, you know, do you want to join me on this mission? 2 seconds into the game, I already got a guild invite, which I never take.
I didn't find the controls to be that bad. I don't know, maybe it could be
It's a very methodic and plodding control style where
here's the thing. You know, if you want me to have a melee weapon and a gun to shoot, at least make it easy to do the melee and the shooting. I mean, it's like a toying cost if I'm actually gonna fire. You know.
Well, listen, boy. You don't just know how to shoot a deer.
Having your attack be Y and not X, and X be your drink potion, that's just backwards to me. I just can't get around that. You know, and
your drink potion.
Here's the thing. You know what they should have done? Just use regular controls that you would expect from any game of that sort, you know?
Your controls sound different than the PlayStation's.
X is on the left side of the Xbox controller. Stat.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about Y, X,
where the square button would be.
The square button is
okay
A.
Then.
So,
yeah, because that's use item, not drink potion. So
use item, but I had it mapped to drinking potion there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so but it's something that
just look at Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor or Batman Arkham Asylum. Or Assassin's Creed, those controls are better. Just copy them. You don't have to do this craptastic control that was probably made sense when you had a PS1.
You're the first person I've heard to complain about this. Honestly,
really?
You're the first person to make any complaints about this game.
Long list of people who don't like the controls.
Okay. No, I know. That's always been kind of a thing with Monster Hunter, and it's just sort of something that most people
that's
have just come to accept.
For Metal Gear Solid 2.
Uh-huh.
In which you have to do dumb shit just to do the simplest actions. Oh, you want to hit someone? Okay, then hold down the trigger and press the right and press the shoulder button and then move your joystick all at once. Why not just press B?
I will admit, I do not like that you have to put your weapons completely away to use an item. It bothers me.
It doesn't bother me as much. It's just that the combat is just... The controls just suck. And the sluggish, too. I mean...
I like the combat. When you figure it out, when you've had time to play with it for a while, and you work up your own pattern... Right. Things start to mesh together, and it starts to become more coherent, more... It's almost always sluggish, but it doesn't feel annoying.
That said...
You gotta find the weapon that fits you, because
the weapon I picked was a sword attached to a gun with a shield.
Okay.
the gun lance.
Yeah, that I liked. That said... I'll probably pick it up when it's like $20 on a discount rack. Because I will say, I do like a game in which you go at your own pace in terms of having to do, you know, I mean, at the beginning, they just rush you through the hunts. You know, it's like, do this, because it's basically tutorializing it, right? But I do like a game in which in which you do have to plan, and you do have to craft, and you do have to do all this other stuff. So I like the crafting. I like the actual hunting itself. It's just that I don't want to deal with those controls right now. So I'll get it when, you know, and the thing is, this is Gamefly, so it's basically my way of demoing a game. So
that is a good way to check out if you like a game or not, if it's something you want to buy or not.
And if they announce that they have a what's it called? If they fix the controls or allow you to map your own controls, then fine, I can do that. But like I said, I'm just demoing it, and you know, there are some things just. The game is just so Japanese in terms of story. It just made me want to slap it in the face and stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You know, I don't know. It's like being able to, these pterodactyl-like birds being able to support not only your weight, but two other people's weight. How do they get off the ground? And I'm sorry, the oversized swords just look silly to me. It's always looked silly to me.
There is no svelte weapon. There is like no svelte weapon in Monster Hunter. Even the katana and the daggers are
especially
like...
Especially the swords. They have the typical JRPG swords that are taller than the person. And somehow
weigh
nothing.
Every JRPG does that. Not every JRP does that.
Oh, well.
But Monster Hunter definitely does.
Final Fantasy definitely does.
Final Fantasy 7 and up. See, that's the problem.
They just have ridiculous swords.
Six was a different era.
Yeah, it just reminds me of the sort of over-the-top thing you'd find in Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's other JRPGs besides Final Fantasy. There's a whole slew of them.
My favorite part about all of this is...
So before we get into this, now, I assume that both of you have also been playing Monster Hunter, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So we can just lump this into what you're playing at the moment too.
I've been playing other things, but I do want to ask, is this the first time you've played Monster Hunter, Jenna?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I've known about it for a long while. It's like, it's on my Gamefly queue. I'm going to give it a chance.
My favorite thing about all of this, almost everything that you've said, is that most of your complaints are every complaint that everyone has ever had about Monster Hunter over the course of the series. And those guys, they just, like, the Capcom just, I guess it's sort of in a way, they just give no shits. Like, this is what they've built, this is what they're going to stay with.
Break with tradition.
Right.
But here's the thing. At some point, someone has to make a Monster Hunter-type game that makes sense. You know, this is, I don't know why people haven't. I mean, when the American equivalent is you have to go buy Cabela's stuff, the Cabela hunting games. I mean, they did have a Cabela dinosaur hunting game.
I do wish that the girls' armors were not all skimpy. I mean, like, you get this bone armor and it's like you're wearing a bone bikini. It's just really weird. You know, like in Skyrim, I have this full dragon bone mail, and it looked awesome. And then I'm in here, I'm wearing like barely enough bones to cover anything.
Oh, yes,
it's like,
you have
what's
a female
going
character?
On here? Yeah, I played a female character in this one. And it just seems unrealistic when you're going up against these giant things that can rip you apart and you're like barely wearing any armor.
I also believe I also believe now that every game should have a calico companion. Every game.
That would be awesome.
Especially Grand Theft Auto games.
yes. I mean, it's just the fact that, that game is meant to be played with other people, but they soften the blow by giving you that companion, and he's a reliable companion. He does his part.
I just want him hanging around like without even fighting, just sitting there, you know? They do talk. They meow a lot, but sometimes you'll have a subtitle when they're saying, "I need help." That sort of
thing. So many cat puns. All of the cat puns.
Yeah. I also like the fact you can design them extensively too. Mine is the is almost all black with white splotches and very vibrant. I gave my main character extremely vibrantly green eyes so that they're almost glowing. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like. And it's just a pity that no one else has taken the concept and done their own version of it. I mean, here's the thing: Saints Row took the Grand Theft Auto concept and made it not suck.
The closest thing to this that somebody has been trying to do would be Dauntless.
Yes, Dauntless. I've seen that one. Yes, it's not as pretty. But it is a lot similar to Monster Hunter.
I don't mind that. You know, the other comparison is that game Ark Survival Evolved.
Oh, yeah, that one is pretty crazy. That one's different in that you're not necessarily – you're not hunting them just to kill the next monster. You can actually tame them and ride them.
And I saw in the game that that they want you to capture them alive so they can study them. And that's something also I like as well in the game, that if I was going to go further into game, I would, you know, definitely try to do the, you know, save these creatures and all that stuff, you know. Although, I don't know. I was a little bit put off at first that after you complete your hunting mission, the game just says, okay, 30 seconds and we're out of here. But now I appreciate it. Now I appreciate it. So, okay, that'll explain how you capture creatures. You capture it. You don't have to worry about hauling it back to the camp. No. You assume it all happened off screen.
Yeah. So you don't have to do the tedious stuff, just the fun stuff.
Yeah, the game isn't about you hauling back a creature, because I could just picture that, and then something happens, and you just, oh, he fell in the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
Some
other big monster comes in and starts chomping on it or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm going to say this. All of the problems that we could possibly have with Monster Hunter aside, World is still one of the most beautiful games I've ever played. And the monster, every time I come across a new monster, I get giddy because it's so cool how they present all of them.
After you kill a monster, the vultures come and start eating it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you can kill the vultures. That's pretty cool, too.
Or you can stuff them in a bag and take them home and put them in your house as a pet.
Yeah. So I've also been playing Out of the Park Baseball 19. For those of you who don't know, it's the text baseball simulation. It's been around since 1999, and it's gotten better and better and better. Now they have sort of a 3D instead of the games being played on a static, you know, you can watch the games now being played out in 3D, which is okay. I've been having this league that's been going on, I think, since 13. Even though I played all the games, you know, I started a new league, I think, with Out of the Park 13 or Out of the Park 14. So it's now in the year 2088. And it has this huge baseball history. All these stats accumulated since that game. So you have 80 years worth of baseball stats of my league's history. And one of the fun things is that it does trivia like Kirby Puckett did this in 1987, but newer editions of the game for the past, I think, three iterations actually take the stats from your league and say, Jeff McInnes in 2055 hit 50 home runs. Did you know? You know, that sort of thing. So it's including your stats into the game stat. It's like the stuff, the fictional stuff that you've been doing is now a part of the history, and the game treats it like trivia. You know?
Hmm.
There's a real lived-in world. And I and Scott, here's the thing. When I was doing an Out of the Park Baseball 18 online league, it contained the developer of Soren Johnson, who developed Civilization 4. Was it 4 or 5?
That's cool.
Yeah. And developer of Civilization 5 and the current guy who developed. So I was in contact with all these Civilization developers, but we never discussed Civ once. It was all baseball all the time.
Wow. Oh,
I did
man.
Get Soren Johnson's Offworld Trading Company.
That's cool.
And I got it when it was just a bunch of boxes. It was a proof of concept, just doing the AI, and now it's a neat little game. I strongly suggest it if you like. What do you call a game that really is just no end goal? I guess it's a SimCity type thing.
Depends on what you're doing in there, but
it's Offworld Trading Company. Guess what's involved? It's about
trading.
It's about establishing a colony and building factories and doing trade from those factories, and you have to keep track of energy consumption and health and all that stuff. So basically you're running a colony, a simulation. Yeah, there's no goals, just, you know, running the best company you can.
Yeah.
So, anyways, aside from Monster Hunter World, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing the Trials in the Sky third game. I'm trying to finish it up before I move on to other stuff. And I've been wanting the Ni No Kuni 2, because that just came out and looks really great. I hope that's my kind of game.
Oh, because the first,
I believe it is.
Because here's the first game, while it was beautiful, obviously it's Studio Ghibli, the story and the combat were, average.
The combat reminded me a lot of Pokemon, where you get this monster or this pokey creature, whatever, and you send it to do the fighting for you, and it just echoed it so much that I was surprised that they didn't get sued, but, you know.
Oh, please. World of Warcraft has been doing that.
I guess so. But yeah, the story did feel really kiddish, you know, just like, I don't know, I mean, you're playing a kid and he's looking for his mom, so you can kind of understand that, but there was just, I don't know, there's a certain vibe about it, I guess, that just feels a little on the childish side. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the new one is more action. You can actually fight in it versus the enemy is a lot better. So you're taking more action in the gameplay. And there's stealth mode where you can hide from enemies. The story looks interesting. So I'm looking forward to playing that someday.
By the way, this is news that there's a rumor going around that Nintendo will finally show off the new Pokemon game for the Nintendo Switch tomorrow, Wednesday, March 28th.
That's what the word on the hill is. It's going to be crazy.
So hopefully we'll have something to talk about next week.
Yeah.
How about you, TJ? What have you been playing other than Monster Hunter World?
So I went back to Guilty Gear. Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2.
Okay.
What a happy place for me.
Here's the thing. Those SNK games for the Neo Geo have been appearing on Xbox Live Marketplace, and I'm pretty sure PS4's PlayStation Network thing. So all these games from the early and late 90s that were on the Neo Geo, including Guilty Gear, have been appearing, so people are able to play the original Guilty Gear Guilty Gear stuff, and it's like,
so these, you can't
all
pay,
these giddy
you can't
people
play.
Talking about it's you know talking about I'm glad it's on Xbox Live Marketplace. Oh right, awesome.
So you can't play Guilty Gear. Guilty Gear came after SNK's golden era of arcade games. It was the first Arc System Works on PlayStation, and I didn't go to many arcades as far as I know. If they did, they were very select and few. But
The Guilty Gear, by the way, was published by Sega.
That was Guilty Gear 2, and I think maybe Guilty Gear X2.
Xrd.
Specifically at Guilty Gear X2, they were published by Sammy Studios, who was eventually bought by Sega.
Guilty Gear X was released on arcade and Dreamcast first.
Yes, it was released on PS2, arcade, and Dreamcast.
Yeah, then the PS2 and Microsoft Windows. Then the GBA. How do you play a game like that on a GBA?
Very poorly. But but actually, the thing about the Guilty Gear games is that after Guilty Gear 2, like Guilty Gear actually 2, Overture, was not really it was an Arc System Works game, but it also wasn't. It was up, the rights for the series were up in the air at the time, which is why they came out with Blaze Blue as a spiritual successor to it.
Remember Guilty Gear XX Accent Core Plus Arc? Jeez, I hate having to say that. And Guilty Gear Accent Core Plus were both on the 360 as well.
Yes.
And that's when it was up in the air back in 2009 through 2013.
Basically, Arc System Works had to fight to get the rights to their own original series back, and they finally got it back with Guilty Gear Xrd, which is a fabulous game. What a wonderful game. The thing is that I was playing Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Fighters, and I love it. It's fun, but I also lost a lot of games, and so I was feeling bad. So Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2 is my happy place. It's the bike that I jump on when I'm feeling down on myself to remind me that I am awesome and very few people can beat me.
You know, this is also the first time that it was ever released on console and PC on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you had to wait for the with the previous one, you had to wait 3 years before it came out on PC.
Right. Our System Works almost always puts their games out way later on PC than they do on consoles.
But what I think is that there's sort of like people are starting to realize that people are starting to buy stuff on PC.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely are. They've found a good market in PC with they've ported the older Guilty Gears over, they've ported Blaze Blue over, and they've ported some fighters that they've published but haven't actually made themselves. They've been porting those over, and they're finding a good market for those. So I think it finally caught on when it came to the latest Guilty Gear and with Dragon Ball. To have it ready on day one, so people can actually get together and throw down.
Yeah, I think your mic has a little bit of a thing when you're talking. Anyways,
my mic?
Yeah, it's like it's running against something. Anyways, we're gonna go into the gaming flashback, and we're gonna go a little bit way back. We're gonna talk about the gaming flashback for RoboCop. RoboCop is a run-and-gun and beat-em-up hybrid arcade game developed and published by Data East. It was released in 1988 as a coin-op arcade game and later ported to the Amiga, the Amstrad CPC, the Apple II, the Atari ST, the Commodore 64, the Game Boy, the IBM PC with DOS, MSX, NES, TRS-80, and ZX Spectrum. So, in the game, the player controls RoboCop, who advances through various stages that are taken from the 1987 movie. The bonus screen is a target shooting range that uses a first-person perspective. The intermission features digitized voices from the actors. RoboCop was licensed to Data East by the UK-based Ocean Software, who in turn had obtained the rights straight from Orion Pictures at the script stage. Numerous versions appeared for the home computers and video game consoles, most of them handled by Ocean. Unlike other home versions, the Commodore 64, Amstrad, and ZX Spectrum were actually mostly original games that only loosely followed the arcade version. In addition to a different soundtrack, the boss battles were replaced with a screen where the player must shoot a man holding a woman hostage without hitting her. Gee, I wonder if you have to shoot him like you shot him in the movie. The original European C64 cassette tape version was notorious for the huge number of bugs, which were cleaned up in the US disc release. I pity anybody, you know, I never had to use one, but using a tape recorder as your storage device was a pain in the butt. Moving on, the games capture the spirit of the RoboCop film to some degree as it involves killing generic criminals and enemy bosses like the dangerous Ed 209. Being quite popular, RoboCop was followed by several sequels, most of them handled by Ocean, including RoboCop 2, RoboCop 3, and RoboCop vs. the Terminator, which was developed for but never released on arcades, and was later ported to several consoles including the Sega Mega Drive, the Super NES, the Nintendo Game Boy, Sega Game Gear, and even in the final generation for the Sega Master System in Europe. Did you ever play this? I remember playing it in the arcade. It was very basic. It was a side-scroller. You were RoboCop. You were walking from left to right and just shooting people. And I remember the Ed 209.
In the arcade, I think it might have been good, but from what I've seen, the NES ports, it's not very good.
It was very basic. Here's the thing. Ocean is notorious for being crap, even more than LGN. LJN. What was it? Is it LJN? Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, I will say this, though. The movie, people don't understand the satire in the movie. And I remember them thinking that the head of the corporation was the good guy. No, he wasn't. He was the ultimate bad guy, even in the first film.
Yeah.
And RoboCop was not a good thing. And that's the point that people missed as well. So... Anyways, were you guys strolling around the arcades in the late 80s playing RoboCop?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not RoboCop, but other games, yes.
Well, at least you must have seen the cabinet. Did you see the cabinet?
I think I did see it, and it probably looked good in the arcade, but I was interested in other games more, like like I said, the Dungeons & Dragons game, the Willow game.
Oh, yeah, the Dungeons & Dragons game. I remember that was basically a Golden Axe ripoff. But Golden Axe was a ripoff of the D&D license, so it's sort of like, you know, reciprocal.
It was sort of a ripoff, but it was also much better.
Well, also, it was a game that you can keep pumping in quarters to keep going on with the game as well, if you wanted to continue your character.
That's how they designed it.
The coolest part about it was that you could actually get equipment and stuff that would alter your character a little bit. And you could there was a password system in some of the arcades. I think there was a password system in some of the arcades that you could bring your character back up with their level and their equipment and everything. And that was so cool.
Yeah,
ridiculously cool.
I remember the World Series baseball. All you did was do your initials and your birthday, and it would call up back your stats.
Yeah, like I'm sure there are other arcades like that, but the Dungeons & Dragons arcade. We're getting off track. I love the Dungeons & Dragons arcade.
I will say that I remember the music for the RoboCop arcade game being great. Obviously, they imitated the theme of RoboCop, but it was just well done for you know, chiptune.
I played it. The only time I've ever played RoboCop as a game was, I think, RoboCop 3 on Sega.
I don't remember it. I don't remember the sequels. I just remember the arcade game. I also remember the C64 screenshots.
I remember it being just like extremely dark and gritty, and a lot of games on the Sega Genesis.
Remember, this is also games like Streets of Rage that are, so, you know, just getting really dark and gritty. All these gritty games, you know, River City Rampage, River City Rumble, River whatever.
That was Nintendo.
Double Dragon.
I think AVGN did a whole series on the RoboCop games and their ports on, and you know, complained about them, I'm sure, to bad controls and bad graphics and just.
I think difficult the older James Rolfe gets, the longer his sideburns get.
Yeah.
Pretty soon he's gonna have one of those World War, you know, the actual sideburns that. You know, the sideburns extend and then go around and become a mustache.
Yeah. I think they call that the Mobius.
Yeah, he's going to turn into that. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. PUBG is considering region-locked servers from PC Gamer. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds' latest test build introduces a new weapon skin system and new cosmetic crates. Developer PUBG Corp. is also contemplating a version of region-locked servers. We are always working towards improving the gameplay environment, reads this Steam Community Update post. This includes providing stable network experiences for our players. You all know that we have implemented ping-based matchmaking systems that has shown a great results, but we didn't want to stop there. One of the solutions we are considering is operating servers so that only those players who reside in that region can connect and play. These servers will be made invisible to players residing in other regions, but at the same time, if a player in an exclusive server region forms a team with a player in another region, they can connect to and play on any of the servers available to either of them. Last week, Brendan Green, a.k.a. PlayerUnknown himself, appeared to downplay the possibility of region-locked servers in conversation with US Gamer. However, the developer reckons this proposed approach aims to offer a better gameplay experience and will help improve network issues and linguistic barriers. This post adds, "We are going to run a limited test of this approach as more detailed research and analysis should come before global application." Elsewhere, the Steam community post explores the new weapon skin system, which comes with a tweaked UI. Skins can be picked up via... Actually, none of that has to do with this. So,
yeah, so... I mean, it's something that you see in MMOs, loosely, you know, because you're not... If you're on the East Coast, you're not obligated to use the East Coast server. You can take the West Coast server. all I know is that, you know, PUBG is having its issues, not the least of which is Fortnite.
It's funny to think that Fortnite came after PUBG, and now PUBG is playing catch up to Fortnite. Fortnite puts out mobile, PUBG puts out mobile.
Yeah, I just saw that PUBG had just released their iOS version, and I keep thinking, how the hell do you play these games on a cell phone? Because they have it on a cell phone too.
There's apparently Bluetooth controllers that can connect to the cell phone with it.
It's just hilarious to me that you're playing on this tiny little screen.
I know it. Yeah, that is. I don't know why you'd want that.
Well, I know that. I would think Scott Azori is disdainful of Minecraft on mobile.
I just prefer the nice, comfortable, large screen in my computer or my console, and it suffices. It meets my needs. So,
It's definitely more of an iPad game than it is an iPhone game. I can't imagine trying to spot someone in the distance with a sniper or any weapon in the game on a 5x2-inch screen.
The problem I have with PUBG is that it's so easy to be high ranked. It's just hide and make them come after you. You know, it's like hide a while, don't even bother attacking. You can get into eighth place like that, you know, just avoid everybody and just make sure you don't get killed for a long while. Until they finally attack you. Until they say, oh, wait, that person there's not dead yet.
If everybody hides, then everybody's got to come after each other eventually.
Yeah, but you have the good players are going to be aggressive. Because they know what's it called. And the good players also know if they're not, they can't hide because they know that the other good players are going to spot them and kill them with a stick before they can even do anything.
Yeah.
The problem with PUBG to me is that it's basically just 100 versus 100 deathmatch and on a big, and, you know, that's all you need, I guess, to have that sort of playground. But at some point, you have to innovate. Your innovation can't just be from being bigger.
Yeah, I agree. They need to figure out what PUBG does best and lean into it harder. Because Fortnite has it figured out. Epic knows what they're doing over there. They know exactly why their game is selling and how it sells so well and what they need to continue to do with it.
Fortnite was built on the idea of it being a co-op game first. You know, the entire Battle Royale thing came later. But first, it was going to be basically a base version of Left 4 Dead. You know, you build your base, you hold off attacks from monsters. That's it. That's the entire game.
I think that's a good sign that people generally do want to work together, at least teams versus other teams.
That's how it PUBG started, though. I mean, then they added a new mode in which it was like, okay, everybody, everybody all for one. I mean, everybody just go ahead and go nuts. I hear stories about really good players are able to build towers immediately to hide from other players. And sometimes a game will have two really experienced players doing a race to build their towers higher first, because the second you stop, you get headshotted. So you have this scene in which you have two players building towers higher and higher and higher. It's like a race. You have to build or die.
Yeah. It's definitely a different style of play from what you see in any of the other games. Like, that building mechanic in of itself just creates, I mean, it's the verticality. You get so much more verticality out of the maps in Fortnite than you do in any of the other games, specifically because of that building thing. And that, you know, in of itself makes strategy all the different.
I hope they get to a point in which we have the CPU power to have that and also complete destructibility. So if you try that tactic of building a tower, someone will just take a bazooka and say, hey, guess what? I'm gonna shoot at the base of your tower, and guess what's going to happen?
The crazy thing is that I think that everything stays in place. Like the pieces blow up, but the whole thing doesn't collapse. Yeah. And that would be an interesting add-on to add a mode where if you kill the base of a building, then the base will fall over.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Rare cancels planned Sea of Thieves death cost after player complaints. This is from Ars Technica. As we noted in our initial impressions of Sea of Thieves last weekend, the game is probably going to need some serious changes to be a truly enduring multiplayer lark. Developer Rare is now killing off one of those brainstormed gameplay changes before it comes to pass, canceling a planned death of cost after intense fan feedback. Currently, dying in Sea of Thieves only costs the player a little bit of time waiting to respawn. But in a forum post late last week, Rare announced a coming death cost feature would add a small gold fee to be deducted every time your character dies.
Go ahead.
And presumably provided.
Hold on, you're cutting out.
Rates are. Do you want me to start over?
Just upping the stakes. Start from there.
Okay. I see where is upping the stakes. Where's that spot?
After every time your character dies.
Yeah, upping the stakes and presumably providing additional motivation to avoiding these unplanned deaths. Rates are dependent on the cause of death, so more avoidable the death, the less patient the captain will be when we enable this feature. Rare wrote. The response by players in a 19-page thread accompanying the announcement was almost universally negative. Many players worried this kind of additional cost would just encourage griefers to stalk other players, killing them over and over, and making it nearly impossible to accumulate in-game gold. Rare clarified in an update it was never intended to charge players for player-versus-player-related deaths, as we understand the negative impact this would have on player experience. Even with that caveat, plenty of players were still concerned the idea would be the change for the worse. The thing that hooked me about this game is the sheer gleeful anarchy of it, one player wrote. Life is cheap and stupid epic deaths are highly amusing. Honestly, we need incentive to stay alive to do stuff before being punished for dying, wrote another. Many players suggested alternative gameplay fixes that could be more productive, like a permanent vault to store accumulated gold or respawns that happen farther from your antagonists to prevent stalking or revenge killings. In any case, Rare producer Joe Neat confirmed in a blog post on Sunday that death cost is well dead. Thanks for the feedback here. We're listening. Neat followed up in a Twitter post Monday that we messed up with the messaging around this, and now it's gone. Thanks for the honest feedback and discussion on this. This is an interesting topic because I do think that there should be consequences for players dying, because like in Minecraft, you can lose everything and have to start over. On like Dark Souls, you can lose all your souls and you have to go run and collect them and hopefully get them without getting killed again.
But here's the thing. This is a comedic game, and I forgot to mention this in what you've been playing, is that I've started playing Trials for the first time with Trials Fusion, and a lot of the charm of that game is just watching how your guy just ragdolls and face plants and does all these stupid things. I mean, the end of every race usually has you dying, you know, having your guy fall off a cliff and stuff like that. So a lot of these people just like dying in this, because the game is comedic. So in a game like Minecraft or Dark Souls, you're not dying for laughs, you know. In this game, a lot of the charm comes from, well, that was weird.
Yeah.
You have the banana. The banana challenge. Come on.
I don't know why they felt that they needed that, I guess, then, if it was the point was to see your character get killed in weird ways or silly ways.
Sometimes they want people to focus on the mission, you know, and that if you don't fear dying, then you lose interest in, there's not as much, see, like you said, with Minecraft, you know, there's a chance you'll lose all your shit. So there's an impetus not for that to happen. They don't want it to be completely inconsequential if you die. They want there to be some penalty, you know? But, you know, sometimes you get stuck in the ocean with a bunch of sharks looking at you saying, it's lunch.
Yeah. And, I don't know, like, to a certain degree, I would say, yeah, it's supposed to be a fun and quirky game where you just do all sorts of silly stuff and have yourself an adventure. Then again, if there are no stakes, there are no stakes, and why would you care?
They also released a 19 gigabyte patch update. I mean, Sea of Thieves is an experiment, basically, and you know, we've seen there are other games that are like Sea of Thieves, like Guns of Icarus, but it's the first time you're seeing it on this scale, you know, to a console market.
And that's the thing for every open world game. Like, the thing that makes the good ones good is that there are stakes in some certain way. I mean, like, even in Minecraft, the most do whatever you feel like doing game out there, and don't worry.
Well, you can actually turn off the zombies and all that stuff if you want.
I was gonna say the creeps that come out and blow up on the stuff that you.
Yes. Can. Yes, those are terrible. See, those are my most hated mob.
Sea of Thieves needs a creep. It needs
it
a creep
have
to
creeps.
Make
it has
people.
Sharks and it has skeletons.
But it needs a creep that matters. It needs a creep that will really upset you if it finds its way to whatever you're doing.
Let me point you at the
doing.
Sharks again.
Yeah, but if there's no death gold or no death counter, then what do the sharks matter? Yeah,
well, the only thing that Sea of Thieves lacks, basically, see. You're the entire point is that your ship, right? And you upgrade your ship and you get all this ship, you know. So it's your ship that you really have to protect. So I think losing your ship is going to be a heavy price to pay. But I think there has to be some sort of like base construction mechanic.
But the ship doesn't matter right now, like, because like you can easily just get another ship.
Well, that's just it. Maybe you won't, but you buy stuff for your ship, so if you have to start with a vanilla ship again, it's like a pain in the ass.
That's true.
Here's the thing. Now, imagine if you have, you're allowed to be able to paint your ship with decals and all that stuff, and then you really have investment in that ship. You don't want to lose that ship, because if you do it, we get back a plain wood ship with nothing on it after we spent all that time painting our ship, getting cosmetics for that ship and all that stuff. That would really kill people. They'd fight tooth and nail to save their ship.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then how do you make...
You can assign a gold cost to that. You have a template set at, you know, over time you can just recreate what your ship was the way it was before it was destroyed. But you still have to work to rebuild your ship the way it was before it was destroyed.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that you need a universal threat that makes people try that much harder.
You have Cthulhu coming out of the water.
Part of Cthulhu, just tentacles.
No, I mean, in the opening of Monster Hunter World, you have that thing that they claim is an elder dragon. It looks like an oil slick to me.
It's a mountain with a volcano on its back.
It looks like an oil slick to me.
He does have some jowly cheeks, yeah. Zora Magdaros.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Red Dead Redemption 2 leak teases Battle Royale mode, and we're getting right back to Fortnite and PUBG again right there, aren't we? From US Gamer. A nearly unveiled leak suggests that there's a lot going on in Red Dead Redemption 2. Trusted Reviews recently felt comfortable sharing some of the leaks the publication received. Neither the site nor U.S. Gamer could substantiate the information, so take this with a... This is a rumor, folks. This is just a rumor. The supposed leaks already predicted the game's main characters, Arthur Morgan and Dutch Vanderlinde, but they also say that the single-player campaign will take place over a huge open world, including locations like Armadillo and Ridgewood. Trains become a mode of transportation alongside horse-drawn carriages, mine carts, and hand carts. Gambling returns in the form of poker, alongside other side activities like horsemanship challenges and a pretty in-depth fishing system. I'm going to stop right there. You know, one of the things I did a lot of in World of Warcraft was fishing. Hmm. And just fishing and doing that. Did fishing anybody else just get into fishing in World of Warcraft?
Not in World of Warcraft, but fishing was like easily a game in of itself in Final Fantasy XV. I cared more about fishing in Final Fantasy XV than I cared about the adventure.
And I'm not even thinking of Animal Crossing. I don't count that. Screw Animal Crossing fishing. How about you, Scott? Was there a game that you played that had fishing as a side activity? Okay. Anyway, like with Grand Theft Auto 5, there will be a first-person mode for both single-player and online multiplayer. The leaks mention animations for the perspective. Online play will be included, but perhaps the biggest reveal alongside competitive multiplayer modes like Revive, Survive, and Money Grab, there will be a Battle Royale mode. No word on this will be similar to ones found in games like PUBG, but if true, this is pretty big news. Red Dead Redemption 2 will also have open-world online mode with sophisticated NPCs which will decorate storefronts in the morning and pack them at night. There's also a variety of ways to earn XP in online mode, and you can even purchase your own customizable tent. Lastly, there's mention of a companion Red Dead Redemption 2 mobile app that will include quote-unquote social elements and a poker minigame. These details are still unconfirmed despite receiving these leaks in August 2017. Trusted Reviews only felt comfortable publishing them recently. So... yeah, I mean, Red Dead Redemption 2 is sounding fantastic. I mean, I liked Red Dead Redemption much more than Grand Theft Auto. And not because the vehicles controlled better. It just had much better, you know... Grand Theft Auto has never had good combat ever. Firing a gun always felt wonky. And Red Dead Redemption 2 is far less wonky, particularly because you had the bullet mode, you know, in which you had the focus mode in which you could just freeze down time and just point out your targets. But still, even when you were firing normally, you shot what you were aiming at.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
the like flanking someone with a Henry repeater across the plain on a horse felt godly. It was like they made the old school like Western weapons feel fun in Red Dead Redemption.
So for those who don't know, these characters I mentioned, Arthur Morgan and Dutch Vanderlinde, were part of John Marston's previous gang before the other Dutch, if I remember correctly. So it sounds like it's going to be a prequel.
I thought Dutch Vanderlinde was the Dutch that...
Really? I guess it's the same Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch Vanderlinde is definitely the guy at the end of the game where Marston and him have their big old showdown, and yeah. Dutch talks about the ways of humanity and brutality.
Well, then it's still a prequel, though, it sounds like.
I know. I wonder if
is John Marston going to be involved is the question.
That's a good question.
And maybe it'll be before or after, because here's the thing. John Marston was locked up for being part of the gang, and the reason why he's hunting them is because it's part of his deal with the government, aside from the fact they kidnapped his wife and son and are holding them hostage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI I'm talking about, not the gangsters. And I think this could be after John Marston is gone from the gang, what they were doing during that entire time.
Yeah. Who knows? It could be any number of things. I mean, the only thing that we really know for certain about anyone, about any of it, is that it's going to have Dutch and this other guy named Arthur Morgan.
It's also going to be three times larger than the first Red Dead Redemption. So,
I will speak to this idea of the Battle Royale and Red Dead. it's already kind of built for it. I mean, if you played if you played the online mode in Red Dead Redemption 1, you know that you could like the open world multiplayer was kind of just a Wild West of killing each other off on the fields as you did.
You know, so, I remember logging in and being immediately headshotted and then respawning and then headshotted again. It was ridiculous.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
The thing that intrigues me is that they're going to have active NPCs in the open in the online version, which means they might have safe zones in which, you know, which you can't attack anybody.
They kind of had that in the first one already, where like if you were in town and you murdered citizens in town, then the game would send police after.
In this case, it's like you can't even draw your gun, because why have sophisticated NPCs if they're just going to be gunned down 2 seconds later?
Mm-hmm.
I'm also interested in the mobile app. See, the thing I liked about Mass Effect 3 was that there was a mobile app that was attached to it. So as you played the game, sometimes the characters would text you, and that was really cool. I hope they do that in here as well, because it has social elements. I'd like the idea that you talk to a storekeeper and they say, "I'll let you know when we have it in stock," and then you get this text on your mobile phone and say, "Oh, guess what? It's in stock."
Yeah, also, it's a
online poker.
I wonder if there's going to be a setup where you can literally just like draw your gun under the table and shoot someone across the table from you.
I don't think so. It would be humorous.
You do a Han Solo shot first moment.
They all shot each other.
It would have to be a thing where
at the poker table, everybody shoots each other at the same time.
Yeah, if you have a specialty,
all the people are dead on next to the table.
You have to have a specialty item for it. You have to procure a Derringer, and it's a one-use item.
Or if you get aces and eights, you automatically die. It's like you get aces and eights, someone comes up behind you and shoots you in the back. It's an NPC.
But if you take a shot at someone, and it's an immediate, like, the federal marshals are after you. They send everyone after you. You shoot someone in a poker game, take the money and run. You get the law.
I really think the towns are going to be complete safe zones where you can't even draw your gun.
Uh-huh.
Which is fine with me. I mean, it would make me more likely to play the online mode. You know, and maybe if someone is killing people on the thing, you have this option to create a posse. Hunt them down. And the entire... Oh, you know, here's the thing. Imagine if you... A posse mode in which you're one person, and you have six people chasing you, and the idea is to see how long you can go before you're killed. You have to hide somewhere in the map. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that would be really cool, actually. I'd play that.
We're making a better Red Dead Redemption 2 than Rockstar is.
You never know. They may be doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. We're making a better Revolve. Well, what a disappointment that game was, huh?
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to reader mail. Go ahead, TJ.
From Jackosis. Hi, guys. As always, thanks for the episode. It was fun to listen to it. Regarding your topics in this episode, I am very hyped for the new Atari console, but I can't describe why. Maybe because the Atari 2600 was my first console as a kid, and I am a bit nostalgic.
I thought that's the entire point of the Atari box, really.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
There have been several times where Sega was my big one as a kid, and whenever somebody puts out a new Sega thing, I have to, like, hold on to my wallet and try to make sure I don't spend anything, because usually I don't need... It's cool, but I don't need it. The new one looks good, but as Jonah mentioned, the console will rise or fall with the games, and they did not show anything right now, or not anything I saw.
Now, me and Scott actually found out like 2 days after the podcast that it was going to have a PC streaming service. We speculated it was basically another version of the Steam box, you know, just with the Atari logo, which is fine. I wouldn't mind a stream because it's going to stream games no matter what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if it comes with this game streaming option and also comes with Atari 2600 and other games, you know, that's fine with me. You know, like I said, it's nice to have something you could pick up, walk around, and go to a friend's place and plug in.
Yeah.
I don't know. If they make their own titles again, be interested to see what they try to do.
Yeah, are they going to make them like old school Atari games, which would be weird? Mm-hmm. Or are they going to make them like...
Hey, you know what? People have done amazing things with Atari 8-bit. I mean, Star Castle is a good example. The reason why Yar's Revenge exists is because no one could make Star Castle on Atari 2600 using the 4K memory that they had, but someone actually did it and released it on a cartridge. You know, mm-hmm. that you could pop into your 2600 if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on to the letter.
Okay. I never played East as a kid because, as far as I know, they are not available in German. And as a kid, I was not able to understand English. The bumping mechanic seems a little awkward, but on the other hand, it's something different to everyone else. I saw some videos about the newer versions of East on PS4. Did one of you play them, one of them, or and can tell me if one of them is worth playing?
Okay, that would be there's only one answer to that question. Go ahead, Scott.
Yes, they are worth it, all of them.
Well, here, let's. You know what? Would you say just start with East 1?
Yeah, it would be nice to do that. I mean, you don't have to, but it's a completionist sort of thing. I want to do them in order and see what the story was, but I don't think you have to. Each one has its own story, so you'll meet like a character and that's like you've met in the previous one, but it's for the most part. It's its own self-contained story, each one, so you don't have to play the first one. But, you know, if you have Steam and you want to play all of the series, then that's a good way to do that. Actually, I think Wise 1 and 2 is on PlayStation 4, so yeah, you could probably... About. Yeah, okay, then yeah, definitely. For me personally, I like... being able to swing the sword and seeing the action of doing that and doing bumping mechanic just feels silly.
Well, here's a question for you.
It works.
Here's a question for you. Would you recommend, if it was to buy East or Wise or whatever, to get the PC version or the PS4 version?
I that depends on them. I mean, I like doing the achievements and having my friends see the stuff I've done. But, you know, they might be more on the PS4, so whichever console they play, or, you know, console or PC they play more or feel more comfortable with, they can go with that. The PC one is very good. You have, like, I think two or three versions of the music. You have, like, the old music from the Sega Genesis, and then they have, like, they had three different versions of the music. So you can play around with that. That's fun. Like I said, I enjoyed the PC version. I'm sure the PS4 version is fine.
Okay, moving on. Go ahead, CJ.
I play Fortnite on PC sometimes with my friends. I did not buy the game, so I can only play the Battle Royale part, and this is fun to me. I also played it on my mobile for 2 minutes. It's unplayable, in my opinion, as expected. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things you're gonna. If you want to stand a chance in Battle Royale on mobile, it's probably something you're gonna have to invest in a USB or a Bluetooth keyboard or mouse to do. Just because I can't even imagine trying to just play with the whatever sort of UI they give you on the actual game itself.
Skip this part. Just move on.
I have one question for the three of you. Are you thinking about streaming some gaming, or do you do YouTube videos? Some kind of Let's Plays or things like that? I think it's more work, so I don't know if you would have time for that.
Go ahead, you first.
I write on a regular basis for an outlet known as Twin Galaxies. We do a lot of coverage on stuff, and I work as a senior editor there. I barely have time to play games as a result. I make time over the weekends, but that's time that I really spend on playing games for myself, because otherwise I spend time looking at what everybody else is playing and paying attention to their stuff, and I really just get burned out.
Yeah, I'm thinking about maybe doing a Let's Play of Mass Effect, because I know that game backwards and forwards. You know, it's sort of like almost like a developer diary, you know, in which I know the entire history and what's happening, and the fact that the way they set up Nihilus as your mentor just makes me crack up, because I know, well, guess what? He's not going to last very long in this game, so don't even try. Anyways, moving on. Go ahead.
I do have a YouTube video or YouTube channel. I haven't posted anything recently, but I do have some Minecraft videos on there and some other games that I've played with friends. So it's the same username, AlphaShard. So if you want to check those out, there it's there's a channel there.
I'm Jonah Falcon on YouTube. I'm very inventive. Anyways, moving on.
I wish you a great week and a happy Easter week.
You missed it.
Oh, sorry. And for the off topic, right now I'm into a very old series, Spin City with Michael J. Fox. In Germany, it's called Chaos City. Don't ask me why. And I started watching The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
that
good luck. That's
is a blast from the past.
You
that
know,
was...
just The Walking Dead. Just be prepared to be depressed. That's the entire name of the Walking Dead is actually depressing apocalypse. People are shit. People are worse than zombies. That's the name of the show. People are worse than zombies.
Yeah, the Chaos City name makes sense to me. I mean, I think that's basically what Spin City means. It's chaotic.
Well, actually, Spin City could mean just, you know, changing the story to suit your own needs, City.
That's true.
And I didn't even know it was going to be. Anyways, moving on to the last part.
Man, Spin City is ridiculously old, though. Like, that was right before Michael J. Fox started really getting... coming down hard.
He actually contracted his Parkinson's during Spin City.
You're right. And so that was like the last time that he did acting on a regular basis for a long time.
Well, he came back, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, 1998 he got Parkinson's, and he had to skip to the 1999 to 2000 season.
He eventually showed up as a guest star in an episode of Scrubs.
Yeah. I remember that.
I'm probably one of the few people around that religiously watch Scrubs.
I watched it. I love that show.
Yeah, I thought it was good too. I don't ever hear anyone talk about it, but yeah, it was good.
I never watched.
It was.
I never watched ER either. So.
But as for Walking Dead, it depends on where you are, and it has its good. It has some really good moments, and then it has some really not so great moments.
Every time I tune in, it's like something really depressing happens. Oh, look, they shot the kid in the leg, but he died.
There's a... Yeah. You know what? You're right.
People are shit. All I know is Michonne is a hero, and she's still shit.
It's mostly about bad people doing bad things to each other, and the good
people doing bad things as well.
And the good people doing bad things to because survive, whatever. It's a very interesting show as far as how horrible can people be when everything breaks
down. Sometimes it seems to me it's like a militia group survivalist video, and it's like white nationalists saying, "Well, see, told you it was going to be shit. This happens, you know. You have to act like that because that's the way it's going to be." You know, sort of like justification for terrible things. Like no one's going to. It's working on the assumption that no one's going to help each other. Without severe evil ulterior motives. And we've been through worse. I think we could do better than what the Walking Dead... I guess The Walking Dead can be viewed as a cautionary tale. But still.
Yeah. It's a very pessimistic view that that everybody just turns into complete assholes and there, it's this road warrior world.
And everybody who doesn't is immediately killed.
It's this road warrior world of eat or be eaten.
Yeah, but Road Warrior actually has a better world than The Walking Dead.
And even in Road Warrior, people form societies.
I mean, look at the tribe from Road Warrior 2. look what happens to the Citadel in Fury Road. At least they have happy endings.
Yes.
You know, anyways, let's finish this letter off.
Eventually, as Tina Turner put it, we can all get beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah, that was a happy ending too. I mean, Tina Turner got what she wanted. The people in the gyro plane got what she wanted. Max didn't get what he wanted, but at least he has a place to go to.
Yeah. All I wanted was to reference a good Tina Turner song.
Well, you could always the same. There's another song that came out the same year that was that we don't need a hero. Another hero. We don't need a hero. I need a hero. I'm holding out for a hero.
I was gonna say. We don't need a hero. We don't need another hero.
Anyways, finally, I'll complete. I wish you a great week and a happy Easter weekend, and hope to get a new episode very soon. I forgot that it's Easter weekend.
Yep.
On April Fools.
Yep.
So God is saying April Fools.
Chocolate bunnies.
Instead of chocolate, it's like inside is old shoelaces. April Fools.
Ugh.
You thought you were getting chocolate. Well, guess what? You're getting castor oil instead.
That would be the worst Kinder Egg. That's a German thing.
No, they have Kinder Eggs here now.
Do they?
Yeah, they're no longer illegal. They have the toys aren't as good, but. At least they have them in my supermarket. Yeah, Kinder Eggs are illegal now.
Well, there goes my chance of being international and appealing to Jackosis.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net, like Ralph did. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. And if you wanna see me on Twitter, I am at Jonah Falcon.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
And he was at Alpha Shard. Anyways, sorry I'm not sticking around long in Monster Hunter. You know what's the tragedy is that if Sony would stop being pissy about it, we could have had Xbox One, PS4 cross-platform on Monster Hunter World.
Someday.
Actually, that's another item that I didn't include. Like a couple of days ago, Tim Sweeney from Epic said that don't worry, there will be cross-platform between Microsoft and Sony because it makes too much sense to have it. Then again, we've never accused publishers of being rational, but you know.
I mean, at a certain point, Sony has to look up and say, oh, we're throwing money in the garbage. We should probably pull it out.
We'll see. Anyways, we will see you next week.